Welcome to Star for the Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have a talk guest every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talk Show website at www.talkshow.com. And search for call ID 17702. Or you can join us on the Twitch channel. Twitch.tv channel is SFU On Call. That's S-F-U-O-N-C-A-L-L. And of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's S-F-U-O-N-C-A-L-L @gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me via Twitter, my account there is, again, SFU On Call. Big surprise. That's S-F-U-O-N-C-A-L-L. And, of course, my personal account is Paul Franz. It's P-A-U-L-F-R-A-N-Z. And just a reminder, that is, I talk about tech and also things Catholic and possibly even religious. I am religious and Catholic. Whatever. And, of course, the tertiary account is Franz Games. F-R-A-N-Z-G. I mean, that's my business account. And, of course, it's lovely TalkCast. Gets turned into a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from A to B. Steve Cole just got back this past week, so he didn't get much done this week, but I'm sure he will have a lot more things done this upcoming week. Because we all know how when you get home from vacation, it's like you get nothing done for the first couple days. Steve Petrick, of course, busy with SFB updates and the Tholian Master Starship book. Gene was busy holding down the fort, make sure things still ran like they're supposed to. And, of course, managing the Facebook page. And while we all were just away in our SFB, SFU, Federation Empire clouds of joy, Gene got engaged. Congratulations, Gene. We don't know who the guy is yet, but congratulations. And, of course, I'll be with everyone else and saying that if it breaks your heart, shallow grave, no one will find you. Moving on to the SFB Online tournaments, Sapphire Star Tournament is starting up. We have 9 psyops so far, and Steve Petrick is definitely waiting on all 16 slots to be filled before he starts the tournament, at least. That is what he said so far. If that changes, I will tell you. Obviously, if you want to be in on this tournament, please sign up now. Moving on word to the library. This week, the library has no progress again. Frank did a little work, but that was mainly on fixing up ships that were in poor health. They need to be worked on and fixed. So the completed conversion still stays at 2,519, with yet to be converted at 811%. Complete is 75.65%. And with that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one, the only Power Fans, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, you got me, you got Dave, and I thought Barry was going to be here, which I think that just going to mean I'm going to be changing my plans then, which should be interesting. It's called On the Fly, you know, let's just see how the whole thing goes. But anyhow, originally we were talking about the chloroform, but Fawn. Took me a moment. But since Barry's not here, I won't be talking about that at the moment. Obviously, there are many things that have been happening around here, and I'm not sure if Dave knows, but I know that I know. And if you've been reading up on the discussion board, you would know that, of course, Gene Sexton is now engaged, which is an awesome thing to find out. You know, because we all wish her the best and wish death to the guy who breaks her heart. But that's a little, you know, that's just between you and me, you know. But given that, yes. Ah, Dave, obviously I don't keep up on the BBS. Just in case you did not know, if you have not listened to the, you don't listen to the podcast to get the news portion, I don't actually record, you know, the video feed of the video portion. I don't do a video of the news portion. And that is that the Sapphire Star 2, number 2, tournament is still open. I will probably be sending out an email to remind people that it's still open, because I thought it was just going to close down as of September 30th. It did not. Steve Petrick seems to be pretty much set on waiting for the full 16 people to start. Now, I can't guarantee you that he won't change his mind. But so that if you want in, get in now. And if you're not interested, obviously I can't force you, but it's a lot of fun. It's only $10. And if you win, all you need to do is win your first game to get enough money from the tournament to actually win back how much you put in. You know, it's all for our dear saps like myself, who I lost in the first round. You know, so we'll just have to wait and see on that. So let me just do something. Ah, crap. I'm sorry about that. And I just want to do one quick thing, which is need to adjust things just a tiny bit over here, because I got Twitch over there and I've got you in the Starfleet talk show over here. So hopefully we can do this the right way. But what we'll probably do then is talk about other things related to the Starfleet universe. Obviously, I've talked about my favorite. Actually, the one thing, I will talk about the Chlorophon just for a quick moment. And that's the one thing that I found interesting while I was catching up on the rules for some of the devices. One of the devices, the energy howitzer. The funny part to me was that I looked at the damage chart. I'm looking at the damage chart and going, what the heck? You put in 6 points of power and 6 points of energy. How much damage you get? 9 points of damage. Like, what the heck? It is that's nuts. You know, that's just way, way, way not enough power for the amount of energy that you put in. You know, enough damage for the energy that you put in. Now, given that, I was like, this was nuts. Then I read the rules. I went, okay, this makes a big difference. That is, you get one, that's 9 points of damage per shield, and you get splash damage. So the splash is also 9 points of damage. Now, given that, the one thing that was kind of interesting to me was the Andromeda. This is why I even brought them up. Because, come on, my favorite empire is the Andromedans. Now, the one thing I still got to read up on this a little more, because I don't quite understand it. Because they referenced the D10.321, which is, you know, the whole number of rules for which define degradation and how the energy flows. Now, the one thing that was interesting to me was that no matter what, you only do even if you are hitting like on shield number 6 or shield number 2, you do not do splash damage per se. What you do is you just take the amount of damage. Let's say that you get the nine, as I said, the 9 points of damage. You only do 18 points of damage that ends on the facing shield, the facing PA panel group, which to me is interesting because of obviously that can be quite powerful, but at the same time, that is a degrading on the weapon's capability. That is, that let's say that you have the energy howitzer firing at the Andromedan on shield number five, shield number six or shield number two, but the rear panels are down. You don't get to do any damage whatsoever. So it's like, wow. No splash damage at all. So there's a benefit there for that. To me, the weird part about the energy howitzer is just the way it does damage. So anyhow, I won't keep that up because I don't want to go talk about the chlorophon too much before Barry, we have an official discussion with Barry about the Empire and the tactics and also the tournament ship and some of the modifications that might have been done to the tournament ship to make it relatively balanced. It's one thing that, and again, we need Barry here for that, which is to discuss how much time did that ship get into practice tournament play? Did they figure out that it was balanced or was it unbalanced? Did they still have questions about the balance? Now, and I'm going to bring this up, and anyone who's listened to me long enough has heard me talk about this before. And that is, I truly feel into my very being that when it comes to tournament play, you're going to need to have Omega to be a completely separate tournament. It cannot have the Alpha Octant ships in it. Now, I understand there's a big issue with that. And that is, if you have those Alpha Octant ships, then you're going to encourage people to play more. So, but the problem in my mind is that the Omegas were never, ever, ever designed to be balanced against the Alpha Octant ships, which was kind of obvious if you look at the speeds and all that kind of thing. And personally, and I pointed this out in past podcasts, and that is, of course, that the Omegas, if you just look at the ships, you look at the weapons, you look at the systems, they all scream fleet play. Not so much of this dual stuff, which makes it for Barry and anyone else who wants to help Barry in making a balanced Omega ship for dueling all the more difficult. Because you've got weapons that are completely and utterly degraded, if not useless, in the context of dual play. It's like the Andromedans, to a certain degree, is not really designed for dueling matches. It's mainly designed for fleet play because of like the displacement device. The displacement device and the transporters are designed for fleet play. Transporters are for mothership, and which is basically the tournament ship is a mothership because of it does have a hangar. And one of the things that is definitely I've brought up when it comes to Andromedan is the whole idea if part of balance, if the people have the biggest issue with the Andromedan's ability to it's defensive because defensive characteristics with, dumping the panels and all that kind of thing. And currently, I have a real problem with any number of batteries less than three. Three is, in my mind, is the minimum amount of batteries needed. I think four is probably best because it gives the Andromeda has the possibility of doing some panel dumps, but can't do the big one, the massive one, which is the one that everyone's scared of, which is the massive dump. And that is in the back, fill up your back panels with 24. Put it, have it in standard mode. Have it so that the front panels are filled up to standard levels. And then go boop and turn off the rear panels. All that energy, all 24 points, goes into the batteries. With four, you can't do that. Now, in my mind, one way of adjusting for that, and I've mentioned this before, which is energy modules. Have a tweakable energy module. Decrease the number of batteries. Because if you want to keep the overall Andromeda's ability to go very fast, okay, keep the amount of batteries down. But if you don't allow him to have an energy module, something so that he can do at least one panel dump, he's dead. Wow, all the way up to the top of the fourth. Sorry, I got distracted by the Dodgers versus Nats game because I know that the Dodgers scored in the bottom of the first. And it's interesting that the Nats have held the Dodgers from gaining any more runs, which is, in my mind, good because I want the Nats to win. Now, I was actually watching the Braves versus the Cardinals, and so close. This close to coming back. They lost. They needed to get like four runs in the bottom of the ninth, and they got three. So this close. So anyhow, back to our originally scheduled program. And MLB, I'm waiting for my check. But anyhow. Because with an energy module, it allows the Andromeda that one point to do the dump. Because of if it can't do a dump, it's dead. It truly is dead. Have you ever tried to play the Andromeda without the ability to do a panel dump? You don't have a shot in all God's green earth of winning. It's impossible to win if you can't do a panel dump. Because at least one, because of you fill up those panels, the maximum you can, if you get energy both in back, rear and back, you got a minimum of 10 points of energy that you can dissipate. 10. Now, you only can take 10% of the energy that's in your panels and put them into the batteries. 10%. So let's say that you got 20 points of energy into the rear panels. 2 points. 2 points of energy. So in the rear panels, you could have a maximum of 6 points of energy removed from 20. So you go from 20 down to 14. That doesn't do anything. Really? So you're going to tell me that you're going to an alpha octant, a normal alpha octant ship. I got an idea. Let's do this, shall we? Let's take all the alpha octant ships, remove one of the shields, so that they have a 60-box shield on the front half of their ship. They have a 48-box shield on the rear of their ship. Now go for it. I would love to have someone play that kind of ship. And let's see how well you do. yes, the first time that someone hits you, you're not going to get through. Fine. Next time, if they ever get through, you're dead. And then they're going to say, oh, that's incorrigible. But that's exactly my point. My point is, when it comes to that, is that unless the Andromeda can do those panel dumps, it's like having regular alpha octant with 180 degree shield. Because it can barely get any energy out of them. You know? So that's my take on that. Again, just a review for those people who have not heard me express that opinion before. And for those who heard me before, I can hopefully that you understand my position on it and understand why it's kind of necessary. You know, and I would love to work on balancing the Andromeda to bring a good Andromedan ship back into the tournament. Something that can actually be played and won. Not, you know, the incredibly overpowerful Andromeda ship that's been there in the past with the six batteries and, you know, I do want a return of the two TR heavies. I really think that, in my mind, okay, you don't want that? Give me four TR lights then. I actually would prefer four TR lights myself. Yes, it would cost me a little more energy. Okay, fine. But the durability factor goes way up, which is why, you know, because that's why I think it'd be important. And go, okay, because I think, see, the thing is, I kind of like the two TRL eight phaser two Andromeda in the fact that it can then deal with like the Zinni and the Klingon a lot more easily when it comes to the drones. Because then it's got enough phasers to knock them all down. You know? Versus, let's say you get the six phaser twos and four TRLs. Yeah, four TRLs. You might actually have to use two TRLs as tractors. Which you can do, but no Andromeda in their right mind would want to have to do that. You know? So, anyhow, moving onward, there's obviously multiple things I can talk about, some wonderful ideas that there's definitely one that I have been working on as of late, and I need to work on some more. And I did not mention in the news portion, which is I've been working one thing I have mentioned in the past, which is I've been working on getting it so that the whole Starfleet Warlord engine, everything about it, can be automated. The whole, which is, I know I've expressed this before, which is so I can have the ability to have it so the games can then automatically be run. In this case, I'd like to have them run on a web server somewhere. And I've got it. I've got some of the basics down. There are still some portions I still need to get done, i.e. the creation of the games. I'd like to get that automated. The setting of the rules, I need to get that automated. I can set the rules. I cannot just set the parameters for the game. When I create the current engine, it actually has one screen. That one screen, actually, I can bring it up right now. Let me do that. Give me a sec. Let me bring it. Oops, did not mean to bring that. Bring up DOSBox, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to one of my here and this. Yes. Whatever. Da-da-da. It's going to take a while. But I just want to show you the screen. Here's the screen. Now, this is the screen. These are all of the parameters that can be used to generate a game. So, you know, you got your game number, you got your game name, you got the first day that runs. Okay, the standard, you know, the default game turn fee, and then different things like how number of stock listed, number of corporate lists, number of primary non-primary factors. The non-primary is set default by set to 1. Hide most ships to false. I don't know what that means. I haven't looked at that. I actually need to look at that. Non-primary effect build, which is false. Scramble corporation numbers and the sectors. Currently, I only scramble the corporation numbers, not the sectors. I never try to play a game with the sectors being scrambled, which to me is kind of a neat idea. The idea of a scrambled sector is that, like, 00 is not next to 01. 00 might be next to 32. So it makes things quite a bit confusing, quite a bit interesting. It's very chaotic. So it's not just you're trying to track what the next sector is. You know, what's in the next sector is what is the next sector. I never played one of those, but I think that might be interesting one these days. How long are the turns? Currently, the default is 14 days. I got one actually running on, it's 7 days. You know, size of the galaxy, currently it's at the 9x9. 9x9 actually is not 9x9. 9x9 is 10x10. That's just the max sector. It's like it goes from 0, 0, from, you know, column or row 0 to column or row 9. So it's actually 10x10. Do you want to wrap the galaxy? Because in theory, we can turn this off. So there's actually edges to the galaxy. 0, 0, you can't go from 0, 0 to 9, 0. Which makes things quite a bit interesting for those sectors along the borders. Because basically, you're fighting against what we call kind of a tournament barrier kind of thing. And then these are the things that can be done to tweak how easy or how hard the game is. You know, do the monsters seek, which means, and which is default, which is, you know, it sees a ship and goes towards it. You know, chance of monster moving and replicating. Obviously, more replication, that means more monsters. More movement means that it's going to be moving a lot more often. The computerized building, if this is for the NPCs, you know, and then this stuff only applies to the standard game. But those are the kind of things, this whole screen would have to be automated. So I'm not, I have to look into it, because I think what I really like to do is be able to write out a file which is read in by the engine, and then which has all the parameters. That's what I'd like to do. But at the moment, I've had problems with that in the past, but I have to look into it. If I need to, like some of the stuff, what I might have to do is, you know how I said Z for zap? It's possible what I have to do is zap the game, quote unquote, zap it, you know, wipe it out, and then individually set these, see if I can set these parameters individually as part of the game. And then, after I set all these parameters as part of the game, then say create. But don't know. I have to wait and see. Yeah, I know the permanent. and quit. So I'm just going to close that because you don't. Huh, did not know that, Dave. Das equals Sanskrit or cuneiform, hieroglyphics, and all that. Interesting. Yeah, for those on the podcast that aren't actually seeing the video, I brought up DOSBox because originally I ran it under DOSBox on my Mac. But I stopped using that because of the problem with DOSBox is that because it actually is written in DOS, you know, it's DOS programs. The reason why I stopped using DOSBox is one, it's so freaking slow. I've got this really super powerful machine. Let me look at this thing. My current Mac Mini is a 3.6 gigahertz Intel Core i3. It's a Mac, so it's one of the new Mac Minis. And it's got 16 gigabytes of RAM. So it's not super high-end machine, but still, 3.6 gigahertz, you'd think it would run pretty fast. Under DOSBox, no, it doesn't, because it's completely an emulator and doesn't run that fast. But, so I've been running it under Windows. Now, the great thing about running it under Windows is that I've got it so that I actually can compile the Clipper program under Windows. So that what I can do is for the programs under Windows, it makes things run real fast. And just like, I'm going to show you real quick about Starfleet Warlord, which is, let's do this one, which is cuneiform. Oh, jeez. That and then let's go D44 and let's go this, which is the same thing. Let's just say Galaxy, give me 22. This is the engine. This is actually the engine compiled and running under the Mac. It's not as you notice, there's a little bit of gapping here, a little bit of gapping here and so forth, which overall, I don't care. That's just because of the font. It doesn't really support it well versus the DOS-based interface. That's the font that's involved. But you can see how it runs. Oops, I don't know. But you can get all these things. You know, if you're a top query, yeah. And let's just do this. Check for victory conditions. You can see this and quit. So that basically, it's quite fast when compiled to be for native versus doing an emulator. And what I'm trying to do, same thing, is actually I'm doing it for free BSD. Because that's currently what my servers are running under, is free BSD, not Linux. Just because I figured being different is a good thing when it comes to security. But anyhow, so I'm working on getting that to work. Actually, I was doing that this week. I got VMware installed on this computer, so that I can create a virtual machine. So then I can create a FreeBSD server locally, and then try to get it all to compile and all to run. Currently, it's not working as expected, and I'm not sure why at this moment in time. It's failing on something which looks, it runs fine on the Mac, runs fine on Windows. It just doesn't run fine on FreeBSD. So I'm not sure what is it. Because it was looking for a certain column. The column is there. I checked the files, and the column is there. It's just that it doesn't seem to find it. And I'm not sure why at the moment. So just have to wait and see. So that now, after I get that done, obviously, one of the benefits to that, after I get the back end done, then I can work on the front end. Now, I have worked a little bit. I brought it down. I have worked on a little bit of a front end. I did some back end, front end work for doing what's called WebSocket later. Now, the thing is, with WebSocket, the whole idea for web using a WebSocket's client, basically the browser as a UI. As I mentioned before in the past, it's been a while since I mentioned that phrase. The phrase in my mind is a browser as the UI. That is, instead of building a computer program in Java or in Swift or Objective-C or C or one of these other tools, everything is written basically in JavaScript and runs in a browser. And the browser just becomes a front end. And then all the back end work is done on the server. You send it, you communicate with the server, the data goes back and forth. And then all of the browser is just a presentation layer. Kind of reminds me, it's like the old client server stuff. Where the client was supposed to be very relatively thin, the server's where all the power was, and all that kind of thing, and that's what it to me is the browser as the UI is. Now there's benefits to having a browser as a UI in that it's very portable, or can be very portable, because Lord knows anyone who's done a web development knows this by heart, and that is each browser has its own little quirks, and sometimes those quirks can bite you in the butt. So I'm just hoping that those quirks don't bite me in the butt. So I was thinking about working on an aid which is basically web-based. I've done some of the work for that. I actually got quite a bit of the work done for that portion, and It's less WebSocket-ish to Ajax-ish, and I'm willing to bet that you don't care, because Ajax, WebSockets, whatever, as long as it looks like a UI, an interaction with the UI on your desktop in the browser, you don't care what the technology behind it actually is doing. Now, I actually looked into WebSockets because one thing I wanted to do is the whole idea of SMB Online in the browser, because of it seems obvious to me that both Microsoft and Apple are both tightening down their platforms to the degree where they're going to require a lot more from the developers to have it so that developers can put, they're basically trying to encourage developers to use native apps, or Lord knows, let's say native apps, because in theory, even Microsoft has created an Electron app. Well, Electron apps actually are basically a browser as UI, but that Electron app is basically it's an instance of Chrome. It's got all the code of Chrome built into it. So now remember this for all you out there: if you hear about a vulnerability in Chrome, keep in mind that your Electron-based apps need to be updated to have the latest engine, the Chrome engine, that's built into the Electron app. So please keep that in mind, and please update your apps as quickly as possible to keep yourself safe. And this is from your so you know, I think going forward, obviously I'm gonna be forced into doing that. I'm gonna see if I can get it notarized. I'll try again. I've already tried twice when it comes to SWB Online so far. I've unsuccessful in trying to get it notarized for the Mac. If that continues to be the case, I'll still release it, but it's just not gonna be notarized at the moment. But you know, it definitely slows things down and definitely indicates that I need to get my butt off of Java and so forth and move to browser based, because of I'm a single guy and I can't, and as is my community small enough in that I can drop Mac, or I can, Lord knows I would not want to drop Mac, because I use that every day, and I haven't done programming in Windows for ages, and I'm not exactly sure if I ever tried to program for Windows, what would I use for it? What kind of framework would I use? I definitely wouldn't be using MFC anymore. I'm not sure what I'd be using anymore, you know, and Lord knows, you know, given that I'm not exactly thrilled with the idea of programming, developing a client under Windows, I think it's kind of pointless. So it'd be, in my mind, it would be heck of a lot better just to have it so it's a web-based. Because then you can play it on your desktop, you can play it on your tablet. I think some people would like I'm not sure they would like to play it on their phones. I think they'd like to watch it on their phones, because it's tough enough to do it in a single browser window. Because that's one thing. Actually, I've been working with a friend of mine on an F&E kind of thing, but it's web based. So We're working on it. We're going to see how long it takes to get there, but I'm not promising anything, because it's his project, and I'm helping him to tweak it. And we both agreed in, you know, verbally that we agreed on a deal so that he'll get paid. I'll get paid, but just like anything else in my mind, when it comes to programs, you have to be motivated. So it has to be a project of love, basically. You have to be able to do it without saying, okay, well, I know this is going to get me a lot of money. Not everyone, you know, you have to have something that you are passionate about. Because in that case, actually, I was listening to Release Notes, and that was one thing that they were pointing out, in that I forgot what developer it is. There's one developer, the person who developed White Noise on the iPhone. He did that as a passion project, because he always needed basically white noise to help him go to sleep better. So what he used to do is have a fan go with it, always constantly droning on in the middle of the night. You know, he'd go to bed and turn on the fan, whether, you know, it was winter or summer. You know, winter, you just have to turn it away, because right here, done the same thing. But he said, you know, why am I doing this? Can't I get my phone to do the same thing as record, maybe just record it and just replay that, you know, just have it just a constant loop? I think he did that. You know, and he, you know, did some other noises You know, actually, this is when his brother got involved a little bit. He was telling me, he told people how, you know, his brother got involved, and he was mentioning how what's the differences between white noise versus pink noise versus brown noise, you know, all the different kinds of noise, you know. He did mention in the talk, you know, the interview that was happening, that pink noise seems to be the best, though brown noise is pretty good too. Brown noise would be like a bubbling brook. That's brown noise. More, it's, you know, earthy. I'm not sure what pink noise is, but he mentioned it. So, but he said that, you know, his brother's the one who told him about the different kinds of background noise that you can use. And, you know, so at the moment he's still there on the App Store. So if you look up white noise, and you'll find his app. And that was a passion project. He put it out there for free, not thinking that anyone would buy it, would actually want it, but, you know, hey, there's a project, I want to share it, and so forth. And it is one of the most popular apps in the App Store. You know? Now, the problem he was mentioning is that he added the same capability to Alexa. Sorry. To the Echo. And the problem with that is that you can't store anything local. Everything is a service. And so that he's been getting these streaming service bills. After a while, he noticed he's had a streaming service bill for like $1,000. And it's like, what the heck? You know? So he's said that he's going to have to start charging for it, for that Echo ability, you know? Or he's going to have to stop providing it just because he can't afford to having $1,000 a month on paying for streaming costs, you know, because of, and I'm assuming this, he's doing this for AWS, because Lord knows. I don't know about him. I'm not sure how much bandwidth he was using, because if I recall correctly, pretty sure you can do the same thing on DigitalOcean's platform. Now, the question obviously for that would be how much bandwidth does he need, and how much per month versus overall bandwidth per second? You know, wow, Rams still is beating the Seahawks. Dang it. So, you know, and that comes down to cost, which is one of those things for me, which is I got these servers running up there. Currently, it's not bad. I got enough there. And currently, most of the awful part about is that when it comes to SW Online, most of the time, the server services, they're being paid for by the Warlord stuff. You know? In theory, if I really, really, really put myself, you know, said, okay, I'm making this as profitable as possible, I'd drop SWB Online. I'd drop it like a rock, because of it. It's not as much. It's not. I don't get as much money out of it than I do for Starfleet Warlord, which I can for per person. I can get anywhere between 16 to, actually not 16, about 8 to $14 a month per person. And now, actually, I'm as I said, I'm running this one game, which is every week. Now, here's the thing. I'm still charging them on a per turn basis. So that person that was paying $8 a month, if he was involved in one game, actually most of the time they're involved in at least two games. If they're involved in two games, that's $16 a month that they pay me for running these turns. Now, with this other game, they're paying me $16 for those people that actually are electronic turns. They're paying me $16 a month to play that one game. You know, which can be quite costly. And I understand that. For some people said, no, I can't do that. And that's fine. But some of the players, they were demanding it. We want to be able to have turns every single week. Well, I'm not giving you a discount, you know, because I still have to do just as much work as I do for every 2 weeks. I have to do it every week now. So I have to do the same amount of work. So, you know, and you're paying me $4 a turn. Heck, it's a lot cheaper than it was when I took over, you know. And so I figured one way to encourage people to move to electronic turns is to have those electronic turns were cheaper than manual turns. Manual turns currently is $7 a turn. And there's actually one person that I currently have that has a special thing, which is he pays me $9 a turn. Now, the problem is with that one is it's just as expensive as the $7 a turn. That's because that extra $2, that basically covers my cost in mailing every single week to him, because he wants physical orders, something that arrives in the mail. And that's fine for me. You know, he's paying extra $2 for that service, and, you know, that's fine. I'm more than happy to spend the extra money because he gives me the extra money. But, hey, if you're willing to pay me $9 a turn, go ahead. You know? So, anyhow, Warlord is very powerful. And as I've said before, I think Warlord for me is going to be where the money is. That's, I really truly believe this in my heart of hearts, that Warlord, Starfleet Warlord, and the asynchronous play, that's the one where I can easily see growth. Because, yes, it's in the Star Trek frame of mind. It's in the Starfleet universe, you know, ADB's Starfleet universe. And it's intertwined with Star Trek to a certain degree. It's got some of the background in Star Trek. But, obviously, it's a tangent, you know, because of, you know, things like the Great Dimension of the Cloud and all these corporations and all that kind of thing is definitely not Star Trek based. Though, in theory, you know, you could, to a certain degree, you could probably change this around a bit to be closer to Star Trek. Because, in theory, you could say, okay, each home office is a home office of you know, let's go with the Ferengi. You know, we could say that, you know, I would love to do that, you know, have more ties to Star Trek. There's one minor problem. License fees go they go through the freaking roof. And I don't have the money to pay for that. I don't think I could ever get that much money for doing how I'd want to integrate in, because it's still a very low cost operation here versus if I was to do something like that, I'd have to have the high graphics. I'd have to get a VC just to give me the millions of dollars that would be required to hire the game developers and the artists and everything else that could actually do it. That would be a challenge. I think first thing obviously would be, getting the VC capital. Now that would be pretty tough to do. You have to give up a whole business plan, that whole thing, and then you have to convince the VC to overall say, okay, well, I want to tie this to Star Trek, and then you have to get them on board to dealing with Paramount. Could that be done? Maybe. But, you know, if I don't tie it to there, if I tie it directly to ADB, I'm fine. And actually, that's one thing. I probably might have mentioned it a while back. Actually, I know I did. I haven't brought it up for a while, which is that I did actually have a frank discussion with Steve Cole about, in the event of his death, you know, in my family, it's called talking like a Franz. We talk about these uncomfortable situations like they're nothing. You know, it all happens. We all die. You know, non-emotional. Not, you know, the emotions are off the. You know, then truly, this is a business discussion because my business relies on him. And basically, he pointed out that not to worry, that it's all planned out. You know, that I forget what exactly he told me, but in the event of his death, my contract is still valid, i.e. it's with ADB and not with him personally. And as it is, there's the whole thing which I didn't even think of, which at the time when I asked the question, which is, of course, that his heirs would inherit, in this case, Leanna. Say Leanna dies, that I'm pretty sure, I know the control of the company goes over to, I think, Steve Petrick. Or someone else. I think that was the case. I don't remember exactly what he said. So, but that, to me, that would make sense if he did. I'm not gonna say one way or the other if that's definitive. So, you know, I'm not saying that is the case. But I know that everything's taken care of. But that the first part, which is that my contract is with ADB and not Steve Cole directly, that is true. That I can definitively say yes. Now, all the rest, you know, one thing with Leanna, the whole thing with Leanna and you know, Leanna inheriting from him, that's me just thinking about it. He didn't say that, but that makes sense to me. So, anyhow, so you know, there is the possibility, and if I can automate the whole thing. Oh, that's even better, especially if I can have it so it's part of a web interface and maybe improve the graphics some. Obviously, one thing I have to do is any graphics, I have to go through ADB. Actually, it reminds me of something that happened a couple of weeks ago. I got contacted through Square, I think it was. Yeah, through Square. Someone contacted me through Square or tried to contact me through Square. And what they were asking me to do was to say, okay, we're going to be a graphical artist for you. And I didn't have time to reply. I get sued in a day with email. You know, I really don't have time to reply on things that I have to basically have to tell them no. You know, if something I was interested, yeah, I'd probably contact them and go and spend the time. But the big problem for me, basically for that, is that I can't do it. I can't have someone else create graphics for Starfleet Warlord. Franz Games, yes. But they can't, for Franz Games, they can't be related directly to Star Trek in any way, shape, or form. Because actually, if you ever have looked at my logo, actually, give me a sec here. Bum, bum. This one, if I have it with me, don't mind the text. I don't see it off the top of my head, and yeah, let's open that. Franz Games logo. That JPEG. That's what it is. That's Franz Games logo. And don't mind me, I'm just gonna minimize this because I wanna keep the Franz Games logo up. And that is, see how the Franz Games logo, actually this was, a, I used, I think, Logo Designer to create this. And I kind of like it because it is what I want Franz Games to be. That is, it's games, you know, and actually hex-based, you know, the whole idea of hex-based games. You know, that's, and the simple hex-based games, Franz Games. It's nice and simple. It's bright. It's, I like it. You know, I created it a while back. It really simple with the Logo Designer. And, you know, it works. You know, I think it works well overall. So, you know, so if I had a graphic designer, they could do some other things for me for this on this kind of logo. Heck, actually, if I was to do that, I'd probably ask my daughter first because of I'd rather pay her than pay someone else. And I know she's a good graphic designer, you know. And I'm not saying I could get a discount, a family discount. I would not want that. I would not want to get a family discount. I'd want to pay her for what she's worth. You know? But anyhow. So that's some, you know, one thing actually I wanted to mention. I do have time, so I'll mention it now. Anyhow, which is I would really like to possibly look into Star, you know, SFU Adventures, you know, have it an interactive fiction kind of thing. I have to look into that. I actually did a little work on that, you know, writing a program that could actually do the interactive fiction, and I got part done, you know, part of it started, and I stopped, you know. I might continue on that, but currently my current focus, the current thing that I feel like I should be working on is automating the back end for Starfleet Warlord, you know, so that I think Starfleet Warlord can move forward. And hopefully maybe I can work on, I'll definitely work on notarizing the Mac app for, you know, for the SFU Online. I need to release it because there's some, I also finish up obviously the multi-tractor thing. Which I fixed, but currently it doesn't quite work well when it comes to, depends upon the order and whether it gets it right. So that's one thing. So it's not quite complete. It works. It calculates things out correctly. It's just that I have to run it through so it goes, hits all of the ships for that. And that's something I can work on. I had other important things when it comes to the back end of the business. And I might have to, at some point, obviously, I'm going to have to work on redoing the websites because it's about that time again. I'm not sure what I'm when it comes to SFU Online, if I'm going to tweak it at all. Let me just show. For those of you who haven't been, this is, you know, the current SFU Online. This header here is pretty old, but I like the header. Obviously, the beginning of it is this huge, nice screenshot of the online client using, in this case, this is the old one. You know, and there's, I think it's relative, it's nice, you know, you go to my account, you go to the news portion, which I haven't updated for a while. I really should keep that one up to date. You can purchase, you know, nice simple thing if you want to SFU Online. And then if you switch over to FedCom, this will switches over to what would be a FedCom. You know, I thought that was kind of neat. And I mentioned here, obviously, you don't need a subscription. Now, the one thing that I have thought about for this is the whole idea of registering. Have people register for an account, not pay for it, but register an account. So that instead of having the current demo mode, it would require you to register, but you would consider demo mode for that. You know, I'd probably have to add a little something, a little feature to the online client to say, okay, you're in demo mode, just to let you know that you're in demo mode. You have a limited account. Another way of putting it, you know, screenshots. I update a lot of the stuff, you know, property of Franz Games, you know, and then of course got some additional minor links down here, like the FAQ. FAQ is still here, it's now no longer up here. You no longer see it hidden. It's hidden from previously. It was very in your face, but I removed it. You know, and got the tournaments. Because the question is, what I really want to work on this some more, redo it, you know, maybe change the colors, change the text, the font that's used, things like that. I'm not so sure. You know, at the moment, I think people are pretty happy. It's bright. It's inviting. Obviously, if I was to redo it, I'd have to redo all these headers. And I'm not sure. Mark... something or another did these headers for me, which was wonderful how he did the headers. I think they're absolutely great. And of course FedCom, it's a little different. It's a different homepage. Cause now you can see this, you can see what FedCom looks like. Obviously, this is one of the things I want to work on, which is changing FedCom. So that's give you an idea of what the website looks like, because I'm not sure any of you have actually visited the website. But that's one thing that I'm gonna have to at some point. I'm gonna have to rethink about doing it over again, because that's one thing that is kind of a requirement these days of businesses, is that every few years, 5 years or whatever, maybe three would be better. But you know, ever so often, you have to update your website to have a new look. Whether it is just different colors or different layout, you know. And in this case, I think I did a really good job in laying out my whole website to be a little more definitely more modern in looking. The funny part is I did this for giggles. I looked up an accessibility reviewer website. Basically a website you can check, you can go to and have it say, okay, look at my website, how accessible, or at least not my website, but look at a web page. Tell me how accessible this is. Is it good or is it bad? What are the things I need to do? And overall, there are certain things that it mentioned that, you know, what was it? There were a few items under the can improve kind of thing. And I looked at those and going, you're right, I can improve them. But in that case, I can't improve them. Because it was mentioning how, you know, that big screenshot that said that just might be background, but there's no alt text? Might have been alt text. But there's something about it which, you know, said, you know, this is not good, or it could be a problem. And yeah, it's not a problem, because it's supposed, when it comes to accessibility, someone who actually visits the website that's blind. The problem is, in my mind, when it comes to blind people, I'm sorry, I truly am. But I don't think SFB Online is the best thing for you, because of the SFB Online client is not accessible. Sorry. But it's also a very graphical based game. And I'm sure that wouldn't be the first thing. Now, for accessibility, I think the best thing for a blind person would be Starfleet Warlord. I can see how they could
be able to, they should be able to actually go through a report. Because as I showed last week, the reports, you know, you got all this text there. You can go through it. Obviously, it's pretty long text. Some of it is flour. You know, it's kind of text that you use just for putting it up and make it more of a story of it. And, of course, in some cases, actually, it's one thing I never tried. I really got to look into. I don't know all of how the engine works, to be honest. I haven't actually spent enough time playing with it. That is, if an expert mode, trims a lot of the text and just has it so that, here, this is what happened, bum, 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 and gets rid of a lot of that text. But, you know, let's say that it does. If it does, that'd even be better. Because of the maps, yeah, I currently include a picture of the map, but in the actual report itself, it lists out what the terrain is for each of the maps. So it's not just that, okay, look at the map for your terrain. No, it lists out, as I showed last week, this tells every single terrain, you know, this hex has this terrain, this hex has this terrain, this hex has this terrain. You know, I'm not sure if the rule book is the best thing for accessibility. I don't think it's the worst thing because it doesn't have a lot of graphics, but I'm not sure if it's readable. I've not actually tried it. To see how readable it was, even though, you know, I have a little bit of experience with accessibility because of my day job has me interacting with people who work on accessibility. I mainly work on translations, is one of the off things that I do. But anyhow, so if you're blind or have a hard time seeing, I think Starfleet Warlord would probably definitely be the game for you when it comes to the two offerings that I have. Actually, three offerings. SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Obviously, if we could get an interactive fiction game, that probably even would be better for you. You know, assuming that it wouldn't rely on graphics a lot. Obviously, there's some graphics that we'd probably want to use, but hopefully there would be a description of what is in the graphic. But anyhow, I think with that, we will wrap it up for this evening. Had a wonderful time talking about things that are happening and things that could happen in the future, and I'm hoping to move some of those things forward. And with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.